this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, March 22nd, 2009, and this is show number 196. Well, hey, have you guys thought up anything clever for the 200th show yet? I think Steve is working on an idea, but I have no idea what he's up to. Has me intrigued. Well, I got to tell you guys, we are lucky that we have a show tonight. The power went out a while ago, and it was looking pretty dicey for a couple hours. And the good news is that Honda Bob gave me a power supply a while ago. It's this gigantic yellow box with black rubber feet on it. Everybody in the chat room got to see it, so that was a lot of fun. They were very excited by it. But anyway, he said it would probably have powered my laptop for a couple hours, so I was going to be on, still get the show up, but doing the live streaming over EVDO, I'm not sure that would have been a great thing. I think my favorite part about the power coming back was my son was paralyzed by the fact that we had no power, and he was lying there reading a book, and as soon as the power came back, he went, "The power's back! The power's back! I don't have to read anymore!" I love it. I want to thank everybody who congratulated him on his acceptance into UCLA this week. That was pretty exciting for us. We're really happy about that. He's not ever going to come home and see me anyway, but it's just nice to know he'd only be a little ways away. All right, let's kick into the show. I wanted to thank all of you specifically, every single one of you, for never once yelling at me about how awful search is on podfeet.com. I mean, come on, seriously, guys. This is horrible. It's dreadful. Nobody ever once pointed that out. It's not that I didn't know it was dreadful. I just couldn't figure out how to fix it. I tried to put in a Google search plugin, but for some reason it wouldn't work. Then research assistant Niraj recently suggested I try out the WordPress plugin Search Unleashed. Sounded like the answer to my prayers. But I installed it, and it didn't work. I mean, seriously, it didn't work at all. I couldn't even find Honda Bob with it. I mean, how often do you think I've said Honda Bob in the show notes? Well, I complained to Niraj that his plugin was dumb, and then he asked me if I'd configured it. Now, of course, I had tried to configure it, but I couldn't find the configuration settings. See, here's one of the problems. WordPress has been updated a bunch of times lately, and the version I was used to using had a section called Manage, and that's where you find any plugins that have configuration options. That's where they show up. The latest version, though, 2.7, 2.7 point something, I forget what. Anyway, it doesn't have a manage section. Niraj helped me dig around until we found the plugins over in settings. Sure enough, there's a button that you can click that says index. Oh, duh. I guess if I hadn't indexed it, no search engine could ever find Honda Bob, even on my site. I clicked on index, and sure enough, we now have real search on podfeet.com. Go give it a try. And thanks again for never pointing out to me how lame it was. Well, I don't think any application I've ever reviewed has gotten more response from users than the one I just did last week on DVDpedia. One of my favorites was the comment on the blog from Connor. That's C-O-N-O-R. That's a totally different Connor than our regular Connor. He wrote in that he was listening away to the show when suddenly he realized I was reviewing the product that he wrote. Can you imagine how much fun that was for him? Because he didn't know I was doing the review. Turns out Nora is who I'd been working with, and she just never slipped him a note to tell him that I was reviewing it. And it was a lot of fun for him to get to hear that review. I bet that was a gas, especially since I liked it. Well, about 126 other people sent in emails after the review to tell me about the free iPhone app called Pocketpedia that works with DVDpedia. I do have to give first dibs credit to Jenna because she told me about it ages ago and I forgot all about it. So Pocketpedia allows you to sync your DVD collection from DVDpedia over to the iPhone. I downloaded and installed it from iTunes onto my iPhone. Sadly, it was empty. Well, I guess that makes sense. I have to get it to talk to my collection first, right? Well, luckily for that day before I got home, I was still allowed to play with it because it turns out you can search Amazon for movies on it that works really, really well. You can see all kinds of cool info about the movies. When I got home, I synced up my iPhone to my Mac. Then in Pocketpedia, there was a sync button all of its own. I clicked sync and in about 2 minutes, my entire DVD library was in my iPhone. It's beautiful. It looks just like address book, except all of the entries have nice album art next to them. Click on an entry and you get the full information about the movie. Click on the tiny album art and it flips around and you get a full screen picture of the album art. works exactly like you would hope it would work. But that's not all. I got an email, or should I say several emails, about the plugin for Front Row that allows you to view your DVD-pedia library in Front Row. Now, that's pretty cool if you have an Apple TV or a Mac Mini hooked up to your TV. Scott told me about it, and while I thought that sounded kind of nifty, I told him I thought it'd be a big old tease because while you could see the images of your DVD collection and everything about them, it'd be kind of frustrating to not be able to just push play right there. He wrote back and he said he can play them. See, he ripped all of his DVDs to a hard drive using Mac the Ripper. Then he was able to link each DVD-pedia entry into the ripped DVD. He said his kids now can play their movies to their heart's content right from Front Row, and he never has to worry about them wrecking the originals. Isn't that cool? Well, now I started to get really greedy. I said, well, what about the DVDs I'm ripping of my home movies? He says I can do them too. He said I'll have to mount each disc image because I'm creating these sparse disc images and copy the video TS folder and audio TS folders out of the mounted discs over to the hard drive. That shouldn't be too big a deal. It does mean yet another copy, but since my plan is to send this hard drive off-site with all the disc images on it, it makes sense that maybe keeping a copy on-site might be cool too. I'm not sure I have this much energy, but who knows? Maybe that'll be my summertime project. All right, you think that's enough people telling me about the wonders of DVD-pedia, but wait, there's still more. Michelle pointed out that I completely missed the idea of smart collections in DVD-pedia. She makes collections for her Christmas movies. I am so going to do that, especially since it has that when-did-you-last-view option that I talked about. So that way we can make sure we go methodically through all of our Christmas movies every year, and we don't forget which ones we've just watched. She also scanned in her older VHS movies, and she has them as a smart collection, along with shows and movies she taped off of TV as a third collection. She also uses the Front Row plugin, but she also told me about the plugin for IMDb that lets you choose certain credit categories from imdb.com. She also told me about DVD Rage that lets you download information for TV episodes and parts of the series. Jeez, what can't this thing do? If you're wondering, she suggested the forums over on the DVD-pedia website. You can see what else they could do. You'd sure think we were done, but we're not. Margaret and many others told me that there's a whole bunch of other pedias. Let's say you're not really fanatical about your DVDs like I am, but you're a book collector. You might like Bookpedia. Like music? CDpedia is for you. Gamer? Gamepedia. They even have bundled purchase options so you can get the combination that excites you. The bundles are only $39 and you get three of them for that price. But let's say you only wanted two of them. They have the Little Pedia bundle. Isn't that adorable? I'm telling you, if you can't find what you want over at brewgee.com, you are way too picky. Thanks to everyone who wrote to me about this fantastic suite of products. I guess I was the last one to hear about it. You may know that I do reviews every other week for Tim Verporten's Mac ReviewCast. I used to play the reviews here too, but some folks complained that they didn't like to hear them twice, so I stopped doing that. I did want to tell you, though, about the one that I did this week for his show, because it had a really interesting angle. Tim did the meanest thing you could imagine. He sent me an application that's a direct competitor to ScreenSteps, which, as you know, is not only one of my favorite shareware applications, but also one of my advertisers. This created a moral dilemma that left me arguing with myself over how to handle it. I went back and forth on whether I should do the review. Could I be fair? And what would it do to my business arrangement with Greg and Trevor over at ScreenSteps? Should I only review it if I hated it? Well, no, that would be the wrong approach. The good news is that I had this argument with myself before ever loading up the application, so I was trying to come up with a decision before I actually started it. I finally decided I had to make a decision before I started playing with it. Then I had an idea. I decided to ask Greg and Trevor what they thought I should do. Their response floored me. They said I should totally go ahead and do it. They said, put the two applications head to head and give my listeners the review they deserve. They said that if I liked the other application better, I should say so. I should tell you what I like better, and that would help them create better software. Isn't that amazing? I'm not going to spill the beans and tell you the name of the competing application, and I'm not even going to tell you the results. I am going to tell you to head over to the MacReviewcast.com and listen to episode number 203 to hear the review. I think I was fair, and I hope it comes off that way. I wanted to tell you all of this here because I wanted you to know how much my integrity means to me. I have my biases like everyone else. Heck, I even announced there's an ever so slight Macintosh bias already, right? But I try to give you the lowdown as I see it. I won't ever be purposely mean. I try to say things like, this could be improved by, instead of this sucks, which might actually be what I'm thinking. I also wanted to tell you about this because I wanted you to know how dedicated the ScreenSteps guys are to creating the best product they can. You know I like the software, but to know that the guys behind it have this kind of dedication is even cooler. I didn't go into this intending this to be an ad for ScreenSteps, but I guess there isn't much of a better endorsement that I can give them than this. If you find yourself creating instructions for people, one-step instructions where you need to put words and images together with annotations, or a series of complex steps, or even a full-fledged manual, I can't more wholeheartedly suggest you give ScreenSteps a try. After you use the free download for a while, make sure you use the coupon code NOSILLA when you decide to buy, and you will decide to buy once you tried it. I guarantee it. With that code, you'll get 25% off the purchase price, and get ready to teach. Head on over to ScreenSteps.com and give it a try. A couple of weeks ago, we had Robert Lockman on the show talking with Bart and I about photography and RAW versus JPEG. And he's done a couple of things for the show, and he's kind of showing up on a whole lot of podcasts like the Mac Review Cast. And I wanted to tell you guys about something he posted on his blog this week. Sadly, his father passed away. His father was a man named Mort Lockman. Now, I actually didn't know about Mort until I watched the video that Robert had up on his website, and I really want to encourage you guys to go over and see it. On his website is photographyandthemac.com, and I put a direct link to the post that he put up because it turns out Mort Lockman was a very well-known, famous writer for the Bob Hope Show. He wrote for the movie Yours, Mine, and Ours. He wrote for All in the Family. In fact, he won an Academy Award for All in the Family. The reason I want you to go see it is it's just the warmest, most compelling thing. It was a video that he put together, his family put together for Mort's 90th birthday last year. And it talks about the man, but he's also interviewed on it. There's some interview shows. It shows him on the Dick Cavett Show. And there's a big part where he talks about Bob Hope and how Bob worked the USO shows. That I'm not joking. I had tears streaming down my face listening to this because his tribute to Bob Hope is just fantastic. It was a really wonderful tribute to Robert's dad, and I encourage you to go watch it. It's pretty long, but I was riveted to this the entire time. It was really very cool. So head on over to photographyandthemac.com, and actually you might learn some photography stuff while you're over there too. This week's Honda Bob ad comes courtesy of Evan Montgomery, and if you like his work, follow him on twitter.com/vanmo92.
Hello, NoSillaCast listeners. This is Evan from out here in beautiful Colorado, reminding you that if you live in the LA or Orange County area and own a misbehaving Honda or Acura vehicle, then you should get Honda Bob to come out to your house and repair your car while you're inside geeking out on your Mac or listening to the NoSillaCast or whatever your preferred activity is. For more information, you can visit his website at hdabob.com. You can contact him at hdabob@aol.com, or you can give him a ring at 562-531-2321. And remember, HD Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide.
Well, it's time for a very exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from BartB.ie, because we have a special guest. But first, let's say hello to Bart.
Hey, guys. Hi, everyone.
Hey, so I would like to introduce the long-awaited Steve Sheridan to the Chit Chat Across the Pond.
Good morning, Allison. Good morning, Bart.
Hey, Steve. Don't you mean reintroduce Allison?
Yeah, I guess technically he's been on before.
Yeah, it was a minor input.
Well, I think, weren't you making Bart happy about our weather right before we got on, Steve?
Yeah, we have one of our rare days with no sun, complete clouds. So I think Bart might might actually be quite happy here.
Well, I wouldn't. It's a bit sadistic to be happy. And in actual fact, there are some small breaks in the cloud here. I see a little bit of blue.
Oh.
Not much, but
give
little.
It back. Give it back. It's I'm damp. Interested. It's cold. It's nasty.
Now, we have some karma to make up. We had the most fantastic week, which is always the way it goes. The whole way through the week, it was clear blue skies, not a cloud in sight. Saturday rolls along, and it's back to usual.
Nasty. Well, let's see. We want to start out with a little bit of security light. Now, Bart said he didn't want to tell you guys this because it'd just give you too many heebie-jeebies. And then I suggested we tell you that we have something to tell you, but because it would give you the heebie-jeebies, we're not going to tell you. And Steve thought that was really mean. So why don't you give us the light heebie-jeebie version there, Bart?
Well, it's every year there's a conference called CANSEC West. I'm not entirely sure what the CAN stands for, but the SEC is security. And basically, it's a bunch of security guys get together and talk about stuff. And they usually have a couple of bombshells to drop. They also have a very famous competition called Pwn to Own. Pwn is sort of hacker speak for own, i.e. hack, i.e. you know, take over. So the idea is they put up a bunch of different laptops, some Mac, some PC, some Linux. And if you can hack them, you get to keep them.
Ooh.
Which is a neat idea. Last year, the Mac was won, and this year it was won again. And in both instances, it was won because of a browser hack, Safari being the culprit. Last year, it was the same guy won it last year as this year. Last year, he actually found 2 zero-day vulnerabilities, and he used one, and he kept the other one to himself, as you do with 0 days. And this year, he used the other one from last year to win the Mac.
That's so mean.
Yeah, although actually, I think last year it was a MacBook Air, and this year it was just a MacBook, so obviously the bad economy is hitting CANSEC West as well. And then there was a kid from Germany, who was a student, I don't know what age he was, he wanted to remain anonymous. He won, I think he managed to break both Firefox and Internet Explorer 8, which was poor timing for Microsoft, because they released it on Thursday, along with a whole sort of big spiel on how it was security-centric and security-great and blah-de-blah-de-blah, and then it was hacked the next day.
Oh, my gosh.
So he won stuff for Sony Vaio, and I don't know what else he won with the Firefox one. And you also get $5,000. So you get a laptop, and you get $5,000. Sort of the main takeaway lesson is that pretty much every browser was hit by a zero-day and completely hacked at CANSEC West. So you're not safe if you run IE, you're not safe if you run Firefox, you're not safe if you run Safari. No. And as these are zero-days, there are no patches.
Chrome wasn't hacked, though.
Not that I have not yet heard that it was, but that may just be a matter of time.
Okay, but I think at the event where they did the other ones, they did not succeed on Chrome. Heard that on Buzz Out Loud.
Yes. It doesn't mean Chrome is safer. It just means that of the people who read CANSEC West, none of them had an exploit for Chrome. Because these guys were prepared beforehand. It took, I think, 2 minutes to hack the Mac because the guy had prepared everything beforehand.
Well, a year beforehand.
A year beforehand in this case, yeah.
So, Bart, do I have this correct that this fellow saved up a hack from last year and used it this year?
Yeah. That is not unusual. If you discover a zero day, you tend to keep it to yourself because it's valuable. Wow. If you're a bad guy, you'll keep it to yourself to either sell to the highest bidder or to do your own nefarious deeds. And if you're a good guy, you're going to keep it for, well, this kind of thing.
Oh,
so I assume that these hacks are the kind that give you the ability to do anything you want on the person's computer?
Yeah, they have to own the computer, so they have to actually take it over. And they have to demonstrate that they have full control.
Wow. Okay, so this was just heebie-jeebies then, because it's 0 day, which means we don't have any patches, so we should just huddle in the corner.
Worse.
Oh, it gets worse. Good.
There's a thing called Metasploit, and it's an open source project, and it's basically a collection of two things, exploits and then toolkits to deploy when you have hacked a machine. So it's a whole bunch of tools to hack and then a whole bunch of things to do once you have hacked. And there have been Mac tools in Metasploit, but the Mac has always been sort of a second-class citizen within Metasploit. One of the big announcements this year was that the Mac is now a fully-fledged member of the Metasploit stuff framework, so all the Metasploit tools are all available for the Mac now. Yay.
Right.
That's great. So I have to go now because I have to unplug my router.
Yeah, to be honest, it's just another sign that we're turning a corner. We're heading towards more Windowsy reality. Vista is coming more secure, as I'm sure Windows 7 will continue. And we're starting to be targeted as much as the Windows users, so I think it's all going to average out. And especially the fact that the browsers are now the target rather than the actual core operating system. We all use browsers. So it doesn't really matter what platform you use. You know, Firefox is Firefox is Firefox. So if they attack Firefox, they get everyone, even the Linux users who are usually completely safe from these things.
Wow.
That's not very happy.
Hey, does this qualify as security light?
No, because there is no solution. Just be careful. Ever-present vigilance is about all you can hope for. And always patch. That is actually the takeaway from this. Always, always patch anything that touches the internet. So that means your chat client, your mail client, your web client.
The other part of it that I am a big believer in is if you get an email from somebody that says, hey, check out this link, that you hover over the link and make sure, well, if you make sure you understand what it's going to. If it says, I really feel sorry for the greeting card companies, because no one in their right mind would open a greeting card email anymore because it's always a hack. You know, 1 out of 1,000 is actually a greeting card someone sent you. But if you hover over that link, those links, you can usually see where it actually goes. Now, I was really excited about, okay, I'm totally protected on that. But every single day, I click on a snip URL in Twitter that takes me someplace
Twitter
else that I can't tell what
really
it is.
Really vulnerable because of the 140 character limit. Almost no one puts up full URLs on Twitter.
Right.
And they're all people you know. So there is currently an exploit of Twitter, which will allow, through clickjacking and something called cross-site scripting, allow you to without knowing it, send messages that you haven't really sent to all of your contacts. It's basically to tweet out with a link, and you haven't really done it. You don't believe you've done it, but your browser's been hijacked to do it for you.
See, in my case, I follow several hundred people, so I don't know all of them. I could very well be hacked just by someone doing it on purpose where they haven't been hacked.
But if you imagine if you get someone like Legal Report with this, you're going to get so many people.
Oh, why'd you give them that idea now,
Facebook,
Bart? Jeez.
I don't think, if I can think of it, the bad guys can think of it. I'm less intelligent than they are. Facebook is another classic. There's a lot of Facebook viruses. And, you know, then you have something coming in from literally one of your friends on Facebook, which I would assume is a friend in real life, telling you to go watch a video or something, because all of these browser hacks require tricking you into visiting the bad guy's URL. So anything that can send you a link is now very important to the bad guys.
Right. Okay, well, this is depressing. So why don't we change the subject? Well, no, we let you do it. See why?
Yeah, I did actually say you probably don't want to do this, but, and then I described everything in an email to you, and you said, oh, we'll do it anyway, so it's your fault.
Okay, great. Well, the reason Steve is on is because several people over the last year actually have asked me to get Steve on here to talk about how it is he makes the home movies that I keep yapping about. And in fact, we even got an email from Peter Boots today asking the exact same question of, well, okay, what hardware did he use? And, you know, Steve went through all of our VHS tapes and transferred them all over to make beautiful DVDs with scene selections and music, and they're just fantastic. And so by popular demand, we've brought Steve in to talk about video and hopefully talk to the future a little bit of where he thinks this is going. So, Steve, why don't you describe the original process that you did, how you created all these movies?
Certainly. But let me just preface this by saying I by no means am an expert at this. I dabble and I have fun and I'm doing it for home use. So if you want to get an expert, we'll have to have another session. But I can at least tell you my experiences. So basically what we needed to do is transfer all of our VHS tapes to digital format. And the reason is our tapes went back as early as 83. And around 5 years ago, we started noticing the tapes were getting darker and darker, basically losing the magnetic content on the tape. So we were going to lose those images and we had to capture them. And the best way to do that is get them to digital, we figured. So had to find a device to transfer from analog to digital. And to do that, you need an A to D converter.
What's an A to D converter for those of us who aren't electrical engineers, Steve?
An analog to digital converter.
Okay.
Lots of them out there. This is back in, I think, about 2003 when I started this. And the one that we purchased at the time was the Dazzle Hollywood DV Bridge, Digital Video Bridge.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, very dazzly.
Well, let me break in there, because I remember I was at a local Mac store, one of the small privately owned places, and I'd been looking at these things, and the guy was willing to sell it to me for only $250 instead of the $300 it normally lists because they were discontinuing it. And I thought, oh, wow, is this really going to be worth it? That's a lot of money. I'm not sure Steve will get that much use out of it.
And we got our use out of it.
Definitely.
So how does this thing work, Steve? Do you plug it into the camera and then play back on the camera at normal speed, or does it manage to go at higher speed, or how does it go?
Well, it's pretty much what you said, Bart. You plug in whatever analog playback device you have. It can be a camera, it can be a VHS player, anything that, say, has composite output, you know, the yellow video composite plus... This one only takes the normal, I guess it would be composite out, video out, and then the two stereo analog audio outs.
Yeah.
And that's what it takes as an input. It takes that analog input, digitizes, and sends it out to your computer on FireWire, which is, in my mind, pretty important. FireWire can keep up with the non-compressed video stream coming into your computer much better than USB can. Although I guess I've heard USB works, but maybe not quite as well as FireWire.
Well, I presume if you had a device that did the compression, it wouldn't matter if it was USB on the other end. But since this thing is giving you all the raw data, you got to get it in quick.
Right, right. And I did not want a compressed video stream coming in. I wanted the raw video. And that's what this produces, a DV file with uncompressed video input.
And that was really
important.
The
same... Sorry, Allison.
Remember, originally these videos were actually taken on VHS-C tapes, which he transferred all of those onto bigger VHS tapes. Now we're taking, and it's VHS to start with, and they're, you know, 15 years old, and now you're going to convert them again and compress them again. The last thing in the world you want to do is compress them as they come in.
Right, right.
So when you say they come in as DV, that's exactly the same as if you had a modern DV camcorder, is it?
Correct, although this would be standard definition, not high def. Probably don't lose too much given that it was recorded with an analog device. There is probably some digitization that you get with standard def you might not get with high def, but it, perfectly adequate for what we were trying to do.
Cool. So then you have them.
So now you've got DV. What do you do with that?
So you got to bring that into some sort of editing tool that you can play with that digital video stream, and I used iMovie, which was a perfectly adequate application for this, just what I needed.
I love the past tense on that.
Well, there's more to be said about that. But
let me interrupt, though. So actually, what I remember happening is when you plugged in the VHS player into the Dazzle and then the Dazzle into the Mac, the iMovie actually recognized that as though it were a camera. So it pulled it in directly. You didn't pull the files into your disk and then pull them from there into iMovie, right?
Right, although... it's a little bit different when you have an analog device coming in versus a digital camera coming in. With an analog device, you basically have to start playing the VHS player or the camera.
Okay.
And then hit record on iMovie to start capturing that digital video stream.
Oh, okay. Okay.
With a digital input device, the two can be linked so that when you hit record with iMovie, it actually turns the camera into play and captures it. You have control from iMovie with the playback device.
Okay.
There's a little synchronization required to hit play and then record with iMovie, but that's not a problem because you can edit the results.
Yeah, just top and tail it, I guess.
Right, right.
So what's the next step in the process then?
Basically, bring in all of the video. Of course, audio is on top of that into iMovie. And then you get into the editing mode, and that's where the time is spent. That's where you can burn many, many hours. But I enjoyed it, and it was definitely worthwhile. So by editing, what we're talking about is getting rid of those scenes that maybe I was pointing at my foot for 10 minutes accidentally, or Allison was doing something she insisted not be captured for history. We got rid of those. Put some nice beginning and end points, chapter marks, titles, maybe embedded some music when appropriate, and created clips with essentially chapters which are later used when creating the DVD, and that's kind of the next step. Chapters are really important here because one of the drawbacks of analog playback is having to stream through your VHS tape to get to a scene of interest. Well, in the digital world, you have direct access right to the scene of interest. And unless you've divided your video stream up into appropriate chapters, you won't be able to go directly to those scenes of interest.
And that's one of the reasons we actually watch these movies now, is because you can throw in the DVD and jump directly to the scene of Kyle with his fire engine sprinkler set.
Yeah, we won't get into that one.
As a courtesy to Kyle.
Right. He would appreciate that.
Right, right.
I'm intrigued now.
And no, you're not going to get to see it. It is
Let's
one
just
of the
say
family favorites.
He was playing with the fire hose.
Okay, no, that's actually enough. Yeah.
So what the other thing that we did was we went back through our old photo albums and scanned in photos of the era of each of these things. And then he made, well, actually, I used to do it myself, but then he got going too fast and I got sick of doing it. And so he does it himself now, but made stickers for the DVD itself and for a label for the case. And he actually created the chapter names in a file so that we could put it in on the back of the DVD. So every DVD shows these beautiful pictures that help you remember what era it was, how old were the kids. It has dates, and on the back, it's got all of the scene names.
That's very cool.
It was a lot of work, but they're just fantastic. I love using them.
I can see why you're so keen to make sure to preserve all of these memories.
Right, right.
Yeah, so you went to the next step, Allison, where you actually create the DVD. So iMovie, remember, is the editing tool which sets up an output that is basically sucked into iDVD, and iDVD helps you actually create the physical and record the physical DVD with chapter markers and buttons and everything you need to go to the scenes you want.
Now, in your 5 or 6 year old G5, how long does that process actually take to burn the DVD?
It varies, but typically my DVDs are 2 hours, and it's really the encoding, not the burning, that takes the time. The burning can be 10 minutes. The encoding can be 2 to 6 hours or more.
Yikes.
I guess it's important to say that while the thing is in a raw format, uncompressed, video's big, way bigger than it could ever fit on a DVD.
Correct. The iMovie RAW formats that I'm working with are typically 30 to 35 gigabytes.
For how long?
2 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you can't do too many of them on a disc.
That's right. And the other thing that brings up, Bart, is the issue of saving the RAW DV or even edited DV files. I just don't have the disk space to do that, although we're talking about upgrading here to support a little more storage of raw DV files.
And if you say Drobo, Bart, I'm going to spank you, okay?
Well, no, I was going to say, it's these kind of numbers that explain why places like the Pixel Core have, hundreds of hard drives that they plug in and out of caddies, because there's no other way to store these things.
Yeah.
So we actually didn't save any of the raw data at all.
Right.
That's all gone. So we now have it just on the DVD itself. But since now, I have figured out how to copy those DVDs, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's good, but it's not the same as having the raw DV files, unfortunately.
Right, right.
Oh, you can't edit again.
You could, but we would be going through a conversion process. We'd lose some quality in the video, and... But it's possible.
But I don't think that's a need that we would ever want to edit it again. But what we do have is, by being able to make a copy, is we won't lose this. That reminds me, Steve, last night when I was playing a home movie with Lindsay and realized that my dad's birthday party doesn't play on that DVD. The DVD died at before the last two scenes. So I sure hope we can get that back from one of the backup DVDs.
Yeah, I do too. And they do play differently on different players. Some players are better at recognizing and solving bit errors in playback.
Okay. Well, let's move forward in time then to the next phase was doing it with a real digital camcorder.
Yes, and what an improvement. It makes life so much easier when you don't have to go through that A to D conversion.
Yeah, because that if you have 2 hours of footage, it takes 2 hours to convert.
Well, as it turns out, Bart, it still takes 2 hours with the method I've been using. I think there are methods where the recording is stored on disk and can be sucked in at a higher rate than real time. But I've been recording on digital video tape, and I get about 2 hours real time on the tape, and I have to play back at real time to bring in the video.
Now, I remember-
oh, so you still have that downside, but you get much better quality video.
Yeah, and that's okay by me because I kind of want to see what I've recorded and where, and I make little notes to myself when there's a point in the video that I need to go back and work on or edit or remove.
Can you see the time while you're doing that import so you can make a note and you're at 30 minutes and 30 seconds, I need to do X, Y, and Z?
Yep, and that's exactly what I do.
You don't do Z.
You do Z.
Actually, I shouldn't have moved you on because I did want to bring one thing up. Steve talked about the device that he uses, this Pinnacle Studio Dazzle, and it turns out that's not in production anymore.
And it's Hollywood Dazzle.
Okay, the Hollywood DV Bridge. So we talked about a couple of different options. He was looking around today to see if we could find something to recommend, but it looked like everything was... USB, which meant it would compress it again, which is something we don't want to do. But there is one other option I wanted to bring up is it's possible to get a digital camcorder that has what they call analog pass-through. And there's a couple of Canon models, the Canon ZR700, which costs $500, but you get a camcorder out of the deal. That's a standard def camcorder. And then if you go up to the HV20, which is $872, but it's an HD camcorder, you get analog pass-through with that. So if you're interested in doing all of your home movies, you might want to look into a new camcorder that has pass-through.
Got it.
So anyway, so back to present time, and then we want to move fairly quickly into future time. Anything else different in the current time method that you use?
The convenience of the digital capture is nice because you have frame-to-frame control of how you edit. Each frame of digital capture is delineated when you play back and edit in iMovie. So if there's a specific breakpoint you want to cut at, you can do that with digital video capture, which is really nice.
Oh.
Also, there's the big plus that there's no degradation of the image. Once it's recorded digitally, that's exactly how it's brought into iMovie and how it's edited, unlike a conversion from analog to digital.
Okay. Now, as I recall, you're a big fan of iMovie 08. That's what you use?
You're trying to start something here, Allison, I can see. Now, iMovie 06 or iMovie HD is what I've been using for the past several years, got very used to it. You and I are very similar in that we just detest manuals. And with iMovie, at least the previous version, didn't have to touch a manual. You can pretty much learn by doing. Not so, in my mind, with iMovie 08. It was not as intuitive, and it did not have some of the features I really got used to in iMovie HD.
So you decided not to go forward into iMovie HD, and now you're looking at iMovie 09, right?
I decided not to go forward into iMovie 08.
Right. I always get them backwards. Sorry. So you're looking at 09?
Yes. And looking at 09, they solved a few of the problems in 08. They helped improve the timeline, although it's still not quite as intuitive to me as iMovie HD. It's a little cleaner interface, a little more intuitive. However, I hate to say it, I still prefer iMovie HD, and I'm trying to get used to 09. I'm trying to give it its due consideration.
Now, it helped that you got to watch Don McAllister's screencast online, right? That got you at least thinking, well, if Don likes it, maybe it's not horrible.
That's right. And I didn't have to read a manual.
Actually, that should be Don's tagline. Don't read the manual. Watch the movie.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Anyway, that's what got me over the hump to at least try iMovie 09. And I'm dabbling. But I feel that I need to go read about it a little bit, and that concerns me.
Well, speaking of reading, I think it's about, well over a year ago, I bought you Final Cut Express, thinking that maybe that was the solution.
Yeah, and that may be my ultimate solution, or at least for the next 5 years, but that definitely requires some reading. You did get me a really good book, which I'm about halfway through, Apple Pro Training Series Final Cut Express HD book. And it's extremely good because it comes with it a bunch of preloaded videos and walks you through editing of those videos. So the book synchronized to those edits, and it's just step-by-step, very intuitive, or very straightforward. I shouldn't say intuitive, but it's a lot to learn. There's a big learning curve.
What's the big difference?
Just the level of control is so much greater with Final Cut Express. Just a whole nother playing field. I would say an order of magnitude more level of control and features that really takes some getting used to, and at least if you're an iMovie HD user.
So on the one hand, iMovie 09 doesn't give you enough control, and maybe Final Cut Express gives you too much control. You're a control freak. You should love that.
Right. That might be a decent summary of the two.
Well, I think one of the things that was bugging you in iMovie 09 was, and actually Don did clear up part of it, was that you were trying to fade in music and then have it fade out for a while and then fade back in within a given clip, and you can't do that now in 09, is that correct?
Yeah, I got used to a really high level of control of audio that plays along with, say, a video clip. You could arbitrarily fade in, fade up, down, mute, whatever, throughout the entire scene, and you can't do that. Can't do that in iMovie 09.
You can do fade in and fade out, but you can't fade in the middle.
Right. Only the ends of the clip can you do that.
Now, technically, I believe...
I thought 09 did ducking.
It does, but ducking is based on other audio, I believe, is based only on other audio playing, and so that's automated. I wanted more manual control of when to bring up and down the volume of a companion audio clip.
See what I mean? Control freak.
Well, it comes into play when you're making slideshows and you want to have effects of certain songs coming in and out during given slides being displayed.
Now, I believe I did determine, though, that you have done that once.
Well, maybe again someday.
And for that, iMovie 09 is going down.
I haven't thrown it out. I'm still looking at it, using it, but now I have two things to learn, iMovie 09 and Final Cut Express.
Well, you could just skip 09 and go to Final Cut Express.
It may be another year before I've got Final Cut Express.
That's right. A year to go halfway through the book. So right. Let's move on to the future. Where's the future going in this for you?
So you want me to look at my crystal ball?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fuzzy.
And I'm going to tell you you're wrong when you get there. Because this is Chit Chat Across the Pond, and they like the bickering.
So, Bart,
well,
can
they
you help
say that,
me?
That we sound like a married couple, but you two are a married couple.
So I'm arguing with both of you then. That'll be fun.
All right, probably. So let's look into the future a little bit. So my model is to capture video, whether it's high def or standard def, onto media that I can take with me, and it's portable, and I can go to a friend's house and pop it into their player and view something. I think the way Steve Jobs is going is not to have physical media, but to have all of that stored up in the cloud somewhere. So you go to your friend's house and you get onto the internet and you stream whatever you've stored somewhere, whether it be your own server or some service. And that's the problem I'm having, is getting used to that. Store all your stuff up on the cloud or on one of your servers digitally, rather than having it on a removable media.
On the other hand, I mean, it's pretty cool that you can throw up a video and send the link to your mom and say, hey, watch this cool movie of, Lindsay making a goal as goalie, which, by the way, is one of our movies on YouTube. You can just send her the link and she can see it right away instead of having to wait for you to burn a DVD 3 months from now and then mail it to her or drive it down to her or something.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that.
What about all those poor family members who don't have good broadband?
Right.
Then they end up not seeing anything. We don't talk to them.
We're not connected. If they're not online, they don't exist.
So there is a trade-off there, because there, on one side, you have the family members who don't have the broadband, but on the other side, you have the family members who don't have the Blu-ray DVD player.
Oh, now he's bringing in Blu-ray. That's a bag of hurt.
This is where I made a suggestion to Allison. You now know what to buy everyone for Christmas. Christmas, you buy them the player, and then you show up with all your Blu-ray discs and put on your video show.
And maybe they weren't getting Blu-ray because they're sick of watching our home movies, Steve, if you thought of that angle.
Could be. But it certainly wasn't a problem with standard DVDs. Everyone had those players. It's just not as clear to me that Blu-ray is going to take off to the same extent and everyone's going to someday have Blu-ray DVD players.
It's a little, thankfully, now that HDVD is dead, there's a little more chance of it happening. But I fear the day of little round pieces of plastic holding data are numbered.
Yep, and that's what we're struggling with right now.
So we've been talking about, you know, I love to buy Steve tech toys, you can tell that. And so I've been wanting to buy him a digital, a high-def camcorder, but I don't know what he would do with it. You know, he would make all this great high-def video, but he can't put it on a DVD. He can't burn it to a Blu-ray DVD. And I even went to the booth for, who are the guys that make Toast Titanium, I guess it is the Roxio. They now make Blu-ray burning software. And I actually talked to one of the guys at the booth, and I said, okay, so you guys are demoing this. You could burn to Blu-ray. It works with a Mac. This is ready to go. So I can just go out, buy a Blu-ray DVD player or burner and hook this stuff up. I'm good to go. He's going to be happy now. And then the guy goes, oh, no, I wouldn't do it yet. He said, no, it's not ready. It's still real weird. He says, you don't know when it's going to work and when it's not, or which one's going to even work.
How long ago?
That was in January. That would be 2 months ago.
Wow.
And this was the Toast Titanium guy doing the demo. I mean, he didn't say don't do it, but he just said, your statement is not true, which is you can go out, buy any Blu-ray DVD burner, plug it in, and go. He said, there are some that kind of work. I said, okay, great. I'm okay with that. Tell me which one works. And he goes, I can't really tell you that either. So, you know, I was just like, oh, man. So Steve could burn blue. Apparently, you can burn high def movies to a regular DVD, but they can only be like 11 minutes long or 15 minutes long, something like that.
Yeah. Not good.
Probably a bit too short. I mean, you know, if you edit as heavily in video as I do in photographs, you might get away with that. But
you'd want to
be pretty extreme.
He's pretending.
I want to part my video.
He's pretending that he cuts out the taping of his foot. But I can actually show you clips on our burned DVDs where he's got... Remember when we were water skiing? And actually, it was me doing my foot. I don't think it was you, but you kept it in there.
That was artistic.
That's fun when you're water skiing. It's like water whizzing by.
Yeah, but it was of my foot, not the water. It was not good. By the way, that was when I had my big bike accident, so I wasn't getting to water ski. So that's a whole other story, though. The injuries of Allison. So if it's not going to be Blu-ray, so do we need... I don't have to get you a high-def camcorder then, Steve?
No, we didn't say that. So here's a solution. Go ahead and get the HD camera, and then... And a sufficiently large storage device to keep all my raw video, HD video. And then when the burning device is reasonable and available, I can do the transfer.
Okay, but does that
mean... There's nothing to stop you exporting multiple formats. So if you have the video in HD, you get, as long as you can store it, you can burn your DVD now, and then you can send it up to YouTube, and then you can burn a Blu-ray DVD later if you want. Right. As long as you keep the HD, you have it to go back to when the technology settles down. If it turns out to be uploading or whatever, it doesn't matter then.
Right, the key is you got to keep the raw DV material, the source material.
So how big a disc do you need, Steve?
My LSB is terabytes here.
LSB?
Least significant bit. We're going to measure this in terabytes, multiple terabytes.
Yeah, it's going to come down to buying a caddy of some sort. And it doesn't have to be a Drobo. It can be any sort of dumb caddy and walloping big discs into it.
Okay, but then I've got to back it up, don't I, Bart?
Yeah, so you need to buy a pair.
And have infinite time to be transferring these files. Plus,
it might be no harm. Do you have gigabit Ethernet in the house yet?
No.
That might be a good time.
I like where Bart's going with this.
No, everything's wireless here.
wireless is just not. If you're going to be moving that kind of stuff over the network, you need gigabit Ethernet. You
can't. You just cannot. I just give him a little FireWire hub, and he copies to two different drives, two different pair of drives. But then he's got to tote them off site. I don't know. How's everybody else dealing with this? I think what normal people do is they have a DV camcorder and they put it onto the little tape, and then they take the little tape and they stick it in their bookcase, and they never do any of this.
That's an
They also don't get to enjoy their videos.
True. True.
Right.
And the other thing a lot of people do is pray. So they have one external hard drive with, you know, terabytes of cool stuff on it, and then they just pray it doesn't break.
I guess.
Which never worked for me. I was never prepared to go that route.
Well, Steve has started yapping about wanting a NAS device, and now it's going
to
be...
Okay, if you go on NAS, you definitely want to go gigabit Ethernet. You don't want to be talking to a NAS over N.
Okay, Steve, that means you have to go in the attic.
Uh-oh.
Get out of the way. You're just in the way in the house. Oh, up you go.
I can stop Steve from doing anything by saying, okay, you'll have to go in the attic to do that. It's like, oh, yeah, that's too hard. I want a new car. Ah, you got to go in the attic. Okay, never mind.
It's a horrible place up in the attic.
As soon as I replace my G4 Mac Mini, I'm getting gigabit Ethernet because I'm always shoving files from one machine to the other.
So, Bart, do they have wireless gigabit Ethernet?
I don't believe so. The best you're going to do wireless is N, which is only half of gigabit.
We're just about all N. If Steve's a good boy and gets a new Mac for Christmas, for his birthday, then we would be all in the house. Hmm. How fast is N?
Yeah, but if you're all N, you're probably all gigabit Ethernet as well.
No, we don't have wires. There's no wires to...
Yeah, but I mean, the machines are all gigabit Ethernet.
Right, but there's no wires going to his den.
Yeah, it's a Saturday project.
It's going in the attic.
No, wires go under carpet.
Oh.
And you buy those little hook things with the nails? And you nail it to all your skirting boards. You should see my house. It's like a data center. There's cables everywhere.
It sounds really attractive.
Actually, the joke has been that Bart is going to run a cable into the bathroom someday, but he hasn't yet.
Ooh, that'd be nice. Do you really need gigabit when you're in the bathroom?
No, I decided to tolerate Ethernet. Or not Ethernet, Wi-Fi.
Hey, Bart, how would you like a trip over to Southern California for a small installation job?
If you're prepared to pay my ticket, I'm happy to fly over and nail some Ethernet cable to your skirting boards.
But what about going in the attic? Would you go in the attic for that?
Yeah, it depends on what your attic is like.
Nasty.
Not good.
Yeah, not good. Okay.
I think there's small animals and bats and I don't know.
Ah, wildlife reserve.
I haven't actually ever been up there, so I don't even know what he's whining about.
Every time I go in the attic, I think of the that Chevy Chase Christmas Vacation movie where he's walking around, he pops right through the board. Says, I see that happening to me one of these days where I'm going to step right through the board and up.
I spent ages in the attic. When I was a kid, I had so much Lego that it didn't fit in the house without everyone tripping over it all the time. So my dad put floorboards into the attic and threw me and the Lego up into the attic.
I think that's part of the key feature is there's floorboards. There aren't here. It's edge up 2x4s with insulation in between that you can't step on. Unless you want to be Chevy Chase.
Yeah, that's what our attic was like until we put the floorboards down.
Maybe that's it, Steve. When Bart comes over to nail things to our skirting boards, you guys could put floorboards in the attic.
We've got plenty of work for him.
It's maybe more than a weekend, but it's the end of things. Is a new garage you're looking for as well? Or
actually, I'd like to extend the garage out a little bit while you're at it. That might be nice.
You need to fit three cars in there.
Oh, that'd be nice. Well, I just have noticed that we might be a little bit off topic here, and we've run about 41 minutes, which is about 10 minutes past the longest we're supposed to go. But, Steve, I appreciate you coming on. A lot of people have wanted to hear your process. And how can they get a hold of you, Steve?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at SP Sheridan. And, that's about it.
You can send emails to Allison, and they'll magically go to Steve.
I think I know where he is. I talk on Skype with him room to room here, so I can get a hold of him if you need to. All right.
If people also contact you and they need to contact me, it's great.
Yeah, I started to feel a little bit like a service there, but that's all right. All right. Well, thanks for joining us again, Bart, and we'll talk to you again next week.
That's certainly the plan. And as always, until then, happy computing.
We had so much fun doing that. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to SP Sheridan there. We had a good time, Bart and I, and at least we entertain ourselves. You never know what anybody else thinks. But anyway, we had fun. So it looks like this is going to wind up another exciting show. I'm hoping the power stays up just long enough for me to upload the show and upload the Mac Roundtable for this week. We had a great show today. It was actually what I might call the Mac Triangle. It was David Sparks and Bart and I. So it was pretty short, pretty small, but it wasn't short, and it was fun-filled and exciting. So anyway, go check that out over at MacRoundtable.com. With any luck, that'll be out tonight. This is Sunday night. We'll see, though, how long the power lasts. And in any case, be sure to keep emailing me at Allison@Podfeet.com, especially with your dumb questions, those questions that you think are just too stupid to ask anybody else, and you're sure you're the only person on Earth who can't figure this one little thing out. That's the kind of thing I like to answer in Dumb Question Corner, so send those on over. And be sure to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeed. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.